Minus Three with Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, sports fans. Welcome to Minus Three. Let's jump right into it here with our guy behind the glass, Eddie Spaghetti, and coming to us from Hawaii. I guess he's doing it in reverse order. Usually you punctuate the end of football season with a trip over there. Hench is doing it differently. He's there in advance of football season. Either way, what's the poop with you, Kevin Hench? How are you?
I'm good. You know, I just go where I'm told. I don't cause a fuss. And in fairness to the heiresses that I live with, it had been almost 2.5 weeks since our last trip. So I feel like they were entitled to a little break from the monotony of Los Angeles.
Chaperoning your little ones and the misses across the big blue marble. You know, who else heirs and heiresses? Tom Brady. His kin are set for life, and so too are their children and their children's children. Now the question is, what's Tom Brady doing right now? Is he on his way to Hawaii? It's unclear because it's Tom Brady, and of course, shame the devil if you would ruminate that it's something negative, but in the middle of training camp, he's just off until August 20th. This is bizarre stuff. And now it's immediately been explained away as like this was understood. Hey, he's a grown man. He's got to have a work-life balance. I mean, obviously, like no one else gets that. Where do you come down on this, Hench?
You know how I feel. Michael Jordan doesn't have to play by the same rules as Will Perdue. Tom Brady.
Right.
Yeah. Iverson. Yeah. Sorry. I know we're all grown men, but this grown man gets special dispensation because he helps us win Super Bowls and you're on the punt coverage team. So,
okay. Wait a second. Yes. Philosophically, I guess I got a little over my skis there. Yes. I am on board with treat your superstars differently than you do with the fringe roster guys. That's fair. I don't think everybody needs to be treated equally. But given the fact that he left New England and then went to Tampa, then tried to buy the Dolphins and then retired and then came out of retirement and all that stuff, if you're a Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan, are you a little worried? Because, of course, people don't go out of their way to denounce Brady, but this seems a little weird.
Javert was less obsessed with Jean Valjean than you are with Tom Brady's movements. I mean, you really need to be in fucking therapy. Like, you wake up every day and go,
you don't
like,
think this is weird?
Where's Tom Brady? What do you think? He's gonna miss opening week? You think
maybe.
He's not gonna know the playbook? He's going to be unprepared. Unprepared. That's Tom Brady. He won't be ready to go.
It's not a matter of if he's prepared, if he's playing. The issue is whether or not he might decide to just say, you know what? I had it right when I announced my retirement.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Tom Brady does as he pleases. He's earned the right.
How beholden do you think he is to an organization when he was trying to buy another one? I don't think he cares about the feelings that would be hurt in the Tampa St. Pete area, right?
Well, I think Tom Brady, in a good way, is a narcissist who cares about Tom Brady. And the way that translates in sports is usually pretty good. If your narcissistic goal is to win Super Bowls, then you want guys to be selfish. But man, yes. Chef, we gotta have an intervention. Does Beth have to hear about Tom Brady all the time? I mean, do you talk about Tom Brady in your sleep?
Fancy pants in Hawaii. Maybe it's still too early there. This is a big story. The face of the league is just in the middle of training camp, and it's fine that if he had arranged it with the team and understood. I'm going to ghost you for a little while in August. I don't need to be there. I think I know how to get ready for a football season. And they're like, yeah, of course we all knew about it. Nobody knew about it. The public wasn't made aware that this was going to happen. It's a little bit weird. And no, I don't think it's unique to Tom Brady. It's a recurring theme for me. And Eddie Spaghetti has heard me say it a million times. If you are not a NFL QB, if you're one of the big time guys, I don't know what it is. It is impossible for these guys to just go away. It's got to involve some massive melodrama. with every single one of them when they go off, from Aaron Rodgers back to Brett Favre and everybody in between, or maybe, well, maybe Tom Brady.
Maybe he's in a cup. Maybe he's in couples counseling.
Maybe he is. Maybe he is. Who would you be rooting for?
Maybe he and his immigrant wife are having political differences. They're trying to hash it out in counseling.
Or maybe he's making a run for the hills.
The flip side of the Michael Jordan, Tom Brady, Allen Iverson rules is we made 194 episodes of Last Man Standing. Tim Allen does not miss work. He's never late. He's not late for the table read. He's not. And then as the show went on, other cast members were like, oh, yeah, she's not going to be here for rehearsal because she's making a movie. Or we got to hold the table read because number two on the call sheet hit traffic. And it was just nuts. I'm like, Tim Allen is at practice. Tim Allen is at work. And I mean, there was one week where he was so fucking sick and he was still grinding through. And I'm like, well, I guess we all have to be at work because the Tom Brady of our ship is clocking in every day. And I mean, that is obviously the ideal. You want your number one on the call sheet, number one on the roster to be at work. But what's your speculation since you spend all day every day thinking about the guy?
You're a weirdo. That's absolutely not true. I had no thoughts on Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for this upcoming preseason weekend until all of a sudden it's news that he is. And then he has his people who have to quickly jump. No. This was expected. Why did... Don't you think it's weird that the Buccaneers didn't announce in advance? Oh yes, this was always the plan for old man Tom to take some time off. Listen,
it seems like if it was always the plan, obviously you would have announced it when the plan was hatched to avoid this very moment of then having to go, oh yeah, it was always the plan. I like just how casually everybody lies, though. Okay, so
that's
we're
my point.
Lie.
That's what I'm getting at.
We're going to lie, and then you're going to print our lie, and then we'll all move on. Okay. All right. Sounds good.
We have a full slate of preseason games. Interest level for Kevin Hench. I've made it clear many times before, it is a Civil War reenactment. I am not going to get duped into it, because when you start watching preseason games, then it changes your opinion on teams, on players. Same effect with Hard Knocks. If you watch the premiere, all of a sudden, I'm sure I'm not alone, you get swept up in it and you think, like, these Lions are going to be good. Then the other side of my brain says, okay, so Dan Campbell gives rah-rah speeches and he clearly is a weightlifting dude and he's been there and the whole coaching staff is ex-players and that's got to be good and create a good vibe with the current players and everything else. And then I think about, wonder what Kyle Shanahan's doing right now. I bet he's not doing up and downs or whatever the hell they call it with the players. And that has no impact on what the scheme's going to be for the week one matchups. I feel like everybody's getting a little bit too excited about betting the over on these Lions. But I also think that people are about to indulge all this preseason football and going to be like, hey, you know what? The backup QB is actually better than our starter. We should give him a look. How say you, what's the big storyline beyond Deshaun Watson? Or is that the big weird one of him playing in a preseason game? And then that's his last game for the next year.
Well, it's funny. I never care about these Civil War reenactments, and I care even less when one of the major political parties in America is now pushing a Civil War reenactment, not a reenactment, just a redux of the original Civil War. Like, Jesus Christ.
Like Romeo, like Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet. They just brought it into modern times.
Better than, it's like, don't just defund the FBI, attack them, go to their offices. Like, it's fucking nuts. It's so crazy. I've never been so happy to be off the mainland as I am right now. But of course, preseason's fool's gold, right? You can't really learn anything helpful, except, do you remember, and I don't know why I saw it, or maybe one of the teams was on Hard Knocks, but I'm sure you guys remember, obviously Spaghetti remembers, that Victor Cruz preseason game where you're like, that guy seems good. Like, you're watching it and you're being suckered in because you're like, oh, but Is he going against the 11th string corner? I don't know, man. He really gets open. He seems fast. And he was nowhere in the plans or the depth chart. And then you're like, oh, yeah, he is an all-pro. So every 100th time, there is some relevant information to be gleaned. Obviously, the Deshaun thing is so insane. You know, we're in this crazy moment. It's all crime and punishment, right? It's all Dostoevsky and Raskolnikov. What's the crime? What's the punishment? And so, you know, Deshaun has gone into some pretty uncharted territory with his crimes in terms of like, okay, what is that in terms of games missed? What how does that translate in our league to games missed? And then Sue Robinson goes at 6 games, and Goodell goes, or Goodell. We just go with Goodell. Let's just go with Goodell. Just we should all disrespect that guy as much as the owner of the Broncos. Goodell goes, no can do, Sue. 6 is not enough. So we're just, you know, we're trying to figure it out. It's like, okay, there are like laws on the books and fines for inflating your property value to get a loan and then deflating your property value to pay taxes. Look, we all want our houses to be worth as much as possible until the property tax assessor comes. Then we want it to be assessed as a shack because nobody enjoys paying property taxes. So we all understand the crime of raising the value of your assets to get a loan and then going, I don't have anything, Mr. Taxman. Pretty standard crime. And, you know, we all know what it is. There are laws and penalties when you get paid. The crime of like heaving an angry mob against the Capitol. Like, well, I don't know. What is the fucking, like people are scrambling through the Constitution and law books, like trying to figure out, okay, what's the punishment? So too with Deshaun Watson and Trevor Bauer. These poor leagues are like, I don't know. We don't have anything in the fucking baseball rule book or the NFL guidebook for these crimes. So, of course, it's nuts and seemingly counterproductive for Deshaun to play now. Like, what?
Right. It's veering towards cruel. Well, I think it's cruel legitimately towards Browns fans. It's like you're dangling the Deshaun while dangling in front of Deshaun.
Bad. Poor choice.
Too bad. Anyway, you're going to run him out there. So you're going to see how good he is as a reminder of the fact that you're not going to see him for at least another year. Because that's where this thing certainly feels headed. Where do you come down? Cleveland Browns season win total, Hench, 8.5. It's now got some juice attached to it if you want to go over at +100, -120 if you go under. This seems like a gimme to take the under at 8.5, right? They're in the division with the Ravens and Bengals.
Just for karma. I mean, it's got to go under, right? It's got to go under. But to your Lions thing, to your Lions fool's gold real quick, because, of course, I was also going in that direction. I said, what is this number? And then it was 6.5. And right. I was like, okay, are they going to win 7 games? And then I looked at their schedule. That's how deep into pulling the trigger I was on Lions over. And then I looked at their schedule and I was like, they do have the Seahawks. They do have the Giants. Sorry, spaghetti. You know, they have a couple of I don't want to say cupcakes because there aren't really any in the NFL. But then they play the AFC East, but also the Colts and the Jaguars. I mean, I can't really adjust to this 17 game. You can play anybody. It's very hard for this old man who liked the 16 games. 4 games against that division in the other conference. It was very easy to understand, kind of like the 64 team field in March Madness. So I was looking at their schedule and I was like, gosh, okay, that's probably a win. That's a lot. The Bears are going to be bad. Okay. Now they play the Jaguars. So let's say, so the Jags over under is 6. So that game, Jags Lions, becomes sort of the de facto over under, I think, for those two teams. So would you rather Jags over six. Do you think the Jags might go 7-10 or the Lions to go 7-10? And as I looked at it, I really did feel like I felt myself moving toward Trevor Lawrence's, you know, career trajectory versus, you know, where we've been with where we are with the Lions at QB. So I backed off. I didn't take the all the fun of everyone being in on the Lions. And I'm moving towards the Jags over six.
I think, you know what? Don't say it too loud, because once everybody gets in on it, there's a weird metaphysical thing that happens that if too many people start touting an underdog, because now we all understand that every year some bum team, some cellar dweller rises up and improbably gets into the playoffs and probably wins a game or three once they're in there. And so everybody has to try to figure out which team it's going to be. The Lions are that team clearly this year. No one's talking about the Jags. Things set up nicely for them. If the Titans, if you buy that there is a little regression from that team, and I think the Colts, I've said it before, I'll say it again, I think they are a legit, are they the best team? No, but they still have a great shot at getting to the Super Bowl, because I think they have the inside track on getting the number one seed. But if Trevor Lawrence is everybody, I know I always point to, like, QB player evaluation is clearly difficult. Look at how bad the people who do it for a living. They hit at a 60% hit rate when they're really, really great at doing it. But was everybody this wrong on Trevor Lawrence? It's not like he was like, well, he's the best quarterback in the class. It was for 2 years in advance of him being eligible in the draft. They're like, best prospect since Andrew Luck, who was the best prospect since John Elway. I don't think everybody could be that wrong about a kid with Trevor Lawrence. So, based on Joe Burrow's pop in his sophomore year, just in broad strokes, it stands to reason in a division with the Texans, the Titans are not world beaters. I think that the Jags have a great shot at doing it. I love talking about these games, not the preseason games, even though there's some fun matchups geographically and otherwise. What I hate, Hench, is in week one, and I don't want to complain too much because I'm excited about the return of football, but one axe I have to grind with Kamish Goodall and company is the schedule making. I've been out in the desert. We've all been out in the desert for the last 6 months without football. We've had the, you know, same as on Naked and Afraid when they have to eat leaves to survive another day. Look, I watched some baseball. I'm not proud of it. You know, I watched some.
You certainly weren't entertained. You definitely were not entertained.
No. I mean, sure, I got a chuckle out of the professional baseball player having his cell phone fly out in the middle of a game that actually counts and he was being paid for and everything else. But the chuckles aside, you know, I watched some atrocious second halves of NBA playoff games along the way. I did what I had to do and I would do it again, because what I'm not just surviving for, what I'm living for is now. Football season is just about here. So beggars can't be choosers. But to that point, I don't give me any game. I don't, if it counts in the standings, I don't, the Lions and Patriots can play. I don't need intra-division games in week one. They're way too important. And same goes for college football too. I do not like powerhouse teams playing in the first game of the season in something that is going to be, when we look at the standings in between Christmas and New Year's, when we look at it and say, like, oh, that week one loss hurts. You shouldn't be playing games of that level of import. As I say, we've been out in the desert. We're starving. Just give me crackers. I don't need surf and turf in week one.
God, you're all over the map. So you're like, spare me the Civil War reenactments. Let's get to the real thing. Let's get to the good stuff. And they go, okay, here you go. Marquee matchup. You're like, whoa. Not marquee. We don't want a marquee matchup week one. We just want a like cracker.
Why are the Steelers and Bengals playing in week one? That's way too big a game. That's why, I don't know if the nation will consider it as much. Well, here's a big one for you. And you know what? I'm going to jump right over it. And by the way, to promote the show earlier in the week, a great episode with Nick Costos, New York fan supreme. He's down kind of sort on the Gents. He's down on the Yankees. As a quick detour to ask you your opinion on this, Sal, because I asked it to Rob Parker on Extra Points, big baseball guy himself. You're a Red Sox guy, of course. Who would you root for, or who do you hate less, the Astros or the Yankees?
I'm a Red Sox fan. What kind of question is that? Like,
well, I don't know. Who do you hate?
I mean, let me put it this way.
Because of Cora, you
when the Red Sox gave Christian Vasquez to the Astros, I was all for it. For two guys that I like, as I'm tracking their minor league careers, I go, oh, okay, these guys are never going to be, contribute on the big league level, but it's okay because we helped the Astros. Like, it was such an obvious fuck you to the Yankees, which I approve of. So as evil as the Astros are, and by the way, are we, it's like the Justin Verlander, not just fountain of youth, but also like his arm's been rebuilt. Like, it's so crazy what he's doing. And those two teams, and I think the Judge Verlander MVP race is going to be interesting in September. But obviously, I hate the Yankees so much that I would happily root for the cheaters, Altuve and Bregman, on the Astros against the Yankees, which just shows how pathological I am about that. But I'm not sure I'm even going to have to worry about that. I don't know if the Yankees are going to get to the ALCS. The Yankees have had a worse record this summer than like the Royals and the Diamondbacks. The Mets are the best team in New York. I mean, they've passed the Yankees in the standings. The Astros have passed the Yankees in the standings. So it's very weird how well-built the Yankees seem to be for the regular season. But I thought that Montgomery trade was weird. Do they think they have a ton of starting pitching depth? Because, Cole, last I checked, had a 3.56 ERA. Severino had just been moved to the 60-day DL. Like, I don't know who they're running out there that they're so certain that they have all the starting pitching they need that they can ship Montgomery for a fifth outfielder. They've got so many outfielders. Obviously, they desperately don't want Aaron Hicks to be playing at all. But let's defer to Spaghetti, who follows this so closely. What are your thoughts on the evil empire?
I'll say this. I let me interrupt before Spaghetti jumps in. I want to hear Spaghetti's thoughts, too. We were talking about it a couple of days ago on the aforementioned episode with Nick Costos, and I do want to give him a bite at the apple here. First of all, it's crazy. Aaron Judge is now minus 550 in the MVP chase. Ohtani is plus 440. Verlander, I don't even see his name showing up getting odds in that one. It is nice that it does make sense you would cheer for the Astros given their cheating ways. So you rooted for the Patriots, so there's a spiritual alignment there for you. But the one thing I'll say is, and Spaghetti said, like, and I think he's right. He said a couple days ago, and he's going to say it again now, is settle down. It's August. The Yankees are firmly in the playoffs. They're going to win the division. So these games aren't terribly important. What I always think about, the two examples off the top of my head, are the 84 Tigers and the 90 Reds. They got so far out in front that the games cease to matter to them. The regular season is over for the Yankees. Who cares if they're winning and losing? Spaghetti, take it from there.
Yeah, that's basically it. I mean, if they got so far ahead that they're kind of in cruise control, and if this kind of weird losing streak stretch happened in May going into June, we wouldn't be talking about it, but it happens now, so people think it has more. I mean, it's a regular season game. The wins and losses count for exactly the same. And if they go into the playoffs and they go maybe sweep their first round game where they beat the Astros, nobody's going to be like, well, hey, you remember heading into August when they struggled? It's a concern. I mean, Montgomery hasn't been great for them as of recent times. And if they get Severino back for the playoffs, having a pitching staff of Cole, Montas, Nestor Cortez, and you throw back Severino, I mean, they have enough arms there. The bullpen got bolstered this deadline. It's going to be okay. Also, they've been missing Giancarlo Stanton for a stretch too. They just got Rizzo back. Like, they had some injuries. It's bound to happen in a long season. I'm staying pretty cool, calm, collected here. I'm not going to go crazy about regular season baseball from July into August.
I know the nice thing about regular season baseball is once football starts, we forget it's even happening. Like, I don't like September. You're like, I don't like, why was I so worried? Football's here.
Let me interrupt. Work in a quick break.
Hey, I don't know what made me think of this, but this is a good theory. I want you to get your guys' thoughts on it. Okay. Brady's just having his normal, preparation for the season, right? Then he reads about Aaron Rodgers' ayahuasca experience. And he's like, motherfucker, that's one advantage I don't have. Where's Brady? He's in the Sonoran Desert. He's going for the toad. He's going to lick the toad because he needs an advantage over Roger. So he's either in Oaxaca doing psilocybin or he's doing the toad in the Northern Desert. Good theory. He's going to come back with his mind open.
Yeah, I wonder how much
Julio Jones grow his hair might out. Not be open, but Tom Brady's mind is going to be blown wide open.
I know that's a good question. Who would I rather try ayahuasca with, Brady or Rodgers? That's a debate. Now, if I expand it to 32 guys, I don't know who would be at the top of the list or near the bottom. Which would be the crazier irony, though, because the rumor is now that it seems inevitable that Watson's going to get shut down for 12 games at minimum. You know, they're pushing this thing. It's not going to wind up being, just two more. Let's make it 8 games. It's going to be 12, or it's going to be the whole season, or who knows, maybe even more than that. So the rumor is that they're going to go and try to get Jimmy G, which is crazy considering that less than a month ago, they traded away and are still paying a giant percentage of Baker Mayfield's contract, which is owed only to their own screwed up handling of the Baker Mayfield thing. So, of course, Baker Mayfield would never take the field for the Browns again. So they had to deal him away. Jimmy G versus Bake in week one would be super duper funny. But Jimmy G, 5 years, 7 years since Brady helped him out. He didn't want Jimmy G to have to play backup to him, and they shared an agent, and that wasn't fair to Jimmy, who's a talented kid. So ship him all the way across football America. Get him out of my hair. Send him to San Francisco. If Jimmy G ends up the starting quarterback of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, which would be funnier, Hench?
Wait a minute. Jimmy G ends up the starting QB of the
Browns. Brady retires, what are they going to do?
Oh,
Kyle
okay.
Trask?
Well, what's funny is that, you know, we've all assumed as Brady engineers his own, you know, bucket list, like he can just do whatever he wants. I mean, he's doing the toad right now. Obviously, the Niners has always seemed like Brady's ultimate, like that's where he'd love to, you know, win his last Super Bowl, do the Montana thing. And so engineering Garoppolo's, by the way, that fucking trade. I mean, Garoppolo hasn't been a world beater, but, you know, he had that gaudy one win-loss record. Brady, like, he may have engineered the trade, but the second-round pick that they were able to flip into Mohamed Sanu, the worst wide receiver statistically in NFL history, like, holy shit, you just gave away a starting quarterback for nothing, for nothing. Anyway, it would be pretty great if Jimmy G ended up back in Brady's shadow. they retire Brady's number. He's got Jimmy G's 3 for 11 at halftime with a pick when they retire Brady's number.
What if the Bucks got so desperate? They're like, wow, the old man who we thought we had for one more year is gone, and we can't do this because this roster is Super Bowl ready. Otherwise, let's go get Trey Lance. They trade Trey Lance for Tom Brady and Brady. Then there's a QB battle between Jimmy G and Tommy B for the starting gig. See, this is fun to talk about. Or maybe if Brady retires, you know who else he might really recall? You know, they would call maybe, probably not, but it's conceivable based on everything. It's all based on relationships. Bruce Arians might be inclined to blow in a call to one Big Ben Roethlisberger. Man, want to give it one more shot, 7?
How much does Ben Roethlisberger weigh right now? It's got to be close to 400 pounds. I mean, nothing to play for. How angry would you be if you saw a picture of 7 and he was in shape for the first time in 20 years? He's like, hey, you know, I got to start taking care of myself. I'm not getting any younger.
It's like your point about Kyler Murray. Like, what if Kyler Murray is suddenly really good? Then you got to be like, hey, Kyler, thanks for the first good few years there. But, man, we should have been maybe challenging for Super Bowls if you would have hit the books a little harder there, pal.
Speaking of Kyler Murray, okay, so that NFC.
No, TLC's, they're making a show about Ben Roethlisberger, my 600-pound life in retirement. Yeah, something like that.
So they are on board. So I've been looking at those over under win totals in the NFC West, and it's like every time I look at the Cards, Seahawks, and Niners, I'm like, God, it just seems like the Rams have why wouldn't the Rams win that division again? And then you see you just see the headline. Oh yeah, Matt Stafford's elbow. He's just gonna have to deal with the pain. It's just gonna hurt every time he throws. That's the way it's gonna be from here on out. So I mean, I really the Rams number is 10, and I just feel like they seem like the class of that division. I don't know. You know, it seems like everyone else has had an event or a roster move, obviously Russell Wilson, that has pushed them in the other direction. You know, maybe Trey Lance is the exception who figures it out right away. But that Rams over 10 seems attractive.
I said maybe a month or so ago that they feel like it's weird. How often is a Super Bowl, the reigning Super Bowl champ, kind of slept on? I'm with you. And Jeff Schwartz made a great provided a great bit of pushback. I wasn't even thinking about Stafford at this point. He said, you know, I'm all about star power. It's like really pro football operates very much like fantasy football does at this point. It's not a bad thing to have a massive percentage of your cap consumed by, you know, six or eight guys. You know, a star power team is not a terrible way to operate in today's NFL. But if they, you know, they're real thin, you know, that's the people. I say, how do the Rams do it? How do they have all these stars just rolling through there? Now they have Allen Robinson, and maybe they'll still get OBJ back to go with Cooper Kupp and so much star. If those guys start getting hurt, they really are thin, and it is, and obviously injuries are going to happen. I mean, what, again, 3 weeks away, and we can be, you know, cavalier about like, the elbow surgery. I mean, he's this QB. He's got, they're resting his elbow. And then we're supposed to, like, the evidence that offsets that theoretically is like, but yeah, but look at him throwing those good passes in camp. Like, they show two or three passes, so it's not a concern. I'm spooked by that one. Absolutely. He's the starting quarterback, and he's not 27 either. He's got a lot of wear and tear on that arm. He's had his injuries. I hear what you're saying. I would love him if it weren't for that news about Stafford's elbow. As it is, though, I like that week one matchup, the Bills. It is now up to 2.5. The visiting Bills are laying 2.5, I assume, because of those elbow injuries. That's a huge game, but at least it's interconference. I don't mind these two heavyweight teams matching up. You have no problem with the Dolphins hosting the Patriots in week one? That's too soon, Hench. You don't want that, do you?
Yeah, you get that shitty loss in Miami out of the way. You start to regroup. I don't mind it. I like hitting the ground running.
I could have a nice ramp up game. If they could play like a Mountain West team or something like that before they have to play divisional games, so that would be good with me. Raiders, Chargers are laying 4, picking up where they left off in week 18. Chargers, I have made it clear now, my pick to win the AFC West there, if that counts as bold, I don't know what. Maybe this counts as bold. I have gone through all the records now, Hench and Spaghetti and everybody else. I have penned as much for you. You can track it down on social media at Damashek. I've laid out all the records, but I'll just, spoiler alert, I'll tell them to you. The Chargers are going to go 12-5 this year. Roll through their schedule. They have a chance to be 5-2, 6-1 going into their bye. The team that I was all set to put in last place. We've talked a lot about the Chiefs and the regression that they're going to have, and the spin that everybody's put on it is like, this was a savvy move to move on from Tyreek Hill. And don't you see now they're a different team, but better and deeper with Sky Moore and Juju and MVS and all of that. Don't buy that jive. It's bad. A guy who is tracking towards the Hall of Fame was just traded away, and you want me to believe that the Chiefs are going to be as good, if not better? That's jive. They're going to take a step back. And by the way, it's all owed to. The thing that we have talked about forever is that once you pay your superstar quarterback, once he gets off his rookie deal and he starts making $45, $50 million, then you don't have the ability to make luxury purchases like Frank Clark, which is what he was 3 years ago when they brought him into KC. Now he's the albatross contractually that probably kept them from keeping Tyreek Hill. These are the things that happen to heavyweight teams once you have your star QB and all of that. So the team that I thought was going to maybe feel to me like, they're a little overhyped, I started to really get through the Denver Broncos. I think they're a 10-win team this year. Bet them over their season win total of 9.5. I like the Broncos. And talk about spin that we've gotten away with, that's gone on a little bit too long. I think we've talked ourselves into Russell Wilson being washed up. He's a 34-year-old man. How say you on Russell Wilson? I think 5 years from now we're talking about like, well, obviously he's a Hall of Famer.
Totally agree. Are people really suggesting he's washed up? Gosh.
Look at that. It's not just Pete Carroll. The last couple of years, it's been a downward trajectory and all of that. I mean, the offensive line is everything to me. And he's going to have a really great one as opposed to a really atrocious one like he had up in Seattle.
I don't think, you know, it wasn't, I mean, obviously he was ducking immediately in Seattle, but I don't think it didn't look like he wasn't moving well or there was anything physically wrong with him. He's just under siege. So I agree with you that reports of his demise are exaggerated. I do think, you know, that you don't love having a weapon go down for the season in the preseason. Obviously, Tim Patrick getting hurt is just kind of alarming. I still think that division is too loaded. You know, I was looking at the Raiders 8.5, and I'm like, okay, I'm like you. I'm on the Chargers. I'm already in on the Chargers to win the Super Bowl. I think that team is dynamite. So then I'm down on the Chiefs, and I just bet them under 10.5 wins. And then I've got these other two, the Broncos and Raiders that I do think finish 3-4 in that division. Is it 8 wins? Is it 9 wins? I don't see the Broncos winning 10 games in that division. But, you know, 9-8, 8-9 for the Raiders and Broncos. I do think it's not inconceivable that the Chiefs go 8-9 and finish last in that division. I mean, that schedule, every time you look at it, it looks worse. It's crazy how hard their schedule is. And again, losing the guy that blows the roof off the defense, how could it not matter? You've got a singular player who presents all these problems and he's gone. By the way,
that's exactly right.
A team with a quarterback who is the least likely to benefit from having that missile because he cannot reach him with his pea shooter.
That is a funny bit of irony. It's just a weird place for Mahomes. So the league figured out his superpower, which was pretty obvious, hitting those deep balls to the fastest guy the NFL's ever had. You know, the idea that like, Andy Reid will figure it out. Yeah, he'll figure it out. I don't think they're going to, you know, go 5-12 or anything. It's not ultimately an insult to say that I have them around 9-8, especially given the schedule they have and how rugged the division is. And, you know, they've won 6 straight divisions. The lack of imagination is what it's is about. It's like, well, but the Chiefs have won it 6 years in a row. Yeah, nobody wins the division forever. Nobody wins. The New York Yankees of the 50s into the 60s. Okay. You did get 11. It's true. But the difference is the level of competition within the division. And again, the point that I keep making about the AFC West is, and you saw this in the NFC North, or teams tried to do this at least with Aaron Rodgers, is – and I think the AFC West has done a better job of doing this. They're not just generically better than they were the last couple of years. They're specifically built to beat the Chiefs. The pieces that they have defensively are intended to slow down Reed and Mahomes and that offense. And so they've already kind of won because they were like, well, Tyreek Hill isn't as relevant as he was for our offense 2 years ago. So I guess maybe we could move on from him. The biggest game, speaking of the
AFC, real quick, because we kind of backed into it. So, you know, you, the point about the Patriots winning the division for 50 years, you know, you're right. Like the quarterbacks that Brady was going up against, it wasn't Herbert, Mahomes, Russell Wilson, right, and Derek Carr. Like there are more good quarterbacks in the AFC West right now than there were in the AFC East for Brady's entire career in New England. It's crazy.
That's literally true.
It's fucking nuts. So on that point, as we've
his stiffest before, competition came from Sanchez and the Jets and from Ryan Tannehill. The guy who had his number more than anyone else had the Patriots number within the division was Ryan Tannehill. That's exactly right. So the comparison's like Patriots won 11. I don't think you understand that Mahomes is a generational talent like Tom Brady. Tom Brady won 11 in a row. Brady had a different level of competition in the division than Mahomes is going to catch this year. Yes.
So speaking about those terrible quarterbacks and crime and punishment, you know, so it's like, I don't know. Are you allowed to take classified documents and then just keep them? And then when they say we need those back, you go, you can have these back. And then they go, well, we're going to subpoena you for those.
You're talking
documents.
About Spygate again. Oh, you're talking. Okay, I'm sorry.
You go fuck
video
off.
Documents.
Go, hey,
okay.
Fuck off. I don't agree with this or whatever. Like, I don't know what. But anyway, there is street law, right? And so I read that Geno Smith story about getting his jaw broken. And it is this weird thing where you're like, he owed the guy $600. Okay, so when you owe someone $600, he's not going to take you to people's court. Like there's no law, like what law can you, I need my $600 back. And if the guy just big times you and tells you to fuck off in perpetuity, totally fine with breaking his jaw. Totally fine with Geno Smith getting his jaw broken and that, like, there's no, like, in stand-up comedy, you know, you go up on stage, you do your jokes. The guy who goes up after you, he can just steal your jokes. There's no copyright law in stand-up comedy. There's only one, what do you do if someone steals your jokes? Oh, you got to hit him. You got to fight him. In the green room, like what? Like, yeah, that's the law of stand-up comedy. So it's like Geno Smith owes, what's the guy's name? He's crazy.
I can't initials. Think of it either, but yeah.
You know, but, and so he's like, give me my money. And then Geno Smith's like, go fuck yourself. When I was reading that story though, because of course Geno is on a much higher deal than a sixth round draft pick, you know, a special teamer. And it's like, it's $600. Like that's not, I picked up the cab fare, like you owe me $20. Like it's like it's $600. And what it made me think of is our crazy fantasy league where, and you know, and the email goes out, everybody owes so-and-so. And it's like, here's how much you owe. Oh, and what happened? Enimpali, Enimpali.
Yes. Okay. Right. Okay.
So the email goes out like, hey, so-and-so won the league and you owe him 200 and you owe him 550 or whatever. And it's like, okay, our league. Okay. So 23 years ago or whenever we started it, we were just all bums. Like for whom obviously like $500 or fucking $2,000, like that, you know, that got you through to the next rent check. Like we were all just, you know, hustling paycheck to paycheck. But in the subsequent two decades, our league has become so insanely financially stratified. I mean, it really is like you could write a book about like the concentration of wealth in America through the lens of our fantasy football league. Like, obviously, we have someone in our fantasy football league who we suspect.
Wait a second. This might, you may have just exposed unnecessarily an unforced error. Oh, you can't get kicked out. I was going to say, because I kicked you out last year, so you're not eligible to be kicked out this year again. Dang it. Because I was going to try to catch you on that. It might make Ham angry if, do you think, so Simmons would be number one in wealth, right?
Right.
Over Ham.
Yeah.
Is Hench over Ham?
No.
No.
Hench is doing fine. No complaints, but
that Top Gun Luke, you know, spending
funny.
Good.
It's funny. We actually went to dinner at the Four Seasons on Hawaii on the Big Island. Now White Lotus shot at the Four Seasons on Maui. You know, it was during COVID. It was really brilliant. Like, hey, I bet we can get that location for a song because everything is closed down. White Lotus was obviously amazing. I suspect we're in an Airbnb up in the jungle. It's pretty amazing. But I think Hammy would stay at the White Lotus, whereas the Hench family still looking to save a buck here or there. But anyway, the point is our league has that sixth round draft pick versus starting quarterback contract where it's like, the email goes out to basically like, hey, guy with no money, you owe guy with $100 million, $338. Cause the waiver wire, you owe $20 for the waiver wire. Like it's so nuts.
It is the class system of the U.S. really playing itself out because you say it's the top. There are other people that if you win the league, something you're not familiar with. But, as somebody who repeatedly does win it, there are those who reach out like, hey, can you give me a pass? Can you give me can we work out a payment plan? Whereas there are other people, as we say, who are deciding between the White Lotus Hotel and then, Airbnb on purpose.
But it is weird. I think this is how Geno Smith was looking at it because he's looking at $600 like whatever. I mean, I've spent that at Olympic Gardens in half an hour. Like what's $600? And so there is a weird point where, if you owe the money to one of the whales, not only do you know he doesn't need it, but there's a good chance it's not really on his radar, except for the part that it's like, that's what makes it fun, right? That's what, there has to be this exchange anyway. I don't know.
It's less than ideal if you're the lead for all the borderline militaristic talk that we, from Kellen Winslow Jr. on down about soldiering, like from Dan Campbell, I find it a little off-putting, the association of football guys, multimillionaires and the talk about the grind and paying all the sweat and pay all that kind of stuff. Whatever, it's fine. It's cute. It's cute rhetoric, I think. But yeah, the Geno. It's less than ideal to be a leader of men in the locker room to be Geno, and there's so little regard for him. Someone's willing to slug him. Same goes for Jared Goff. You're the lead. You're the quarterback. You're one of 32 human beings, and Hard Knocks finds you so uninteresting. They barely point a camera at you. Bad start to the year on that level.
It is funny. Like if you think of what's the opposite of buying Rolexes for the offensive line, it's like not paying a teammate you owe $600 to.
Yeah.
Like those gestures that have been invoked in the Deshaun defense is like, he's a generous guy. It's like, wow. Talk about anti-leadership. Well, first of all, the story, which is undisputed, is that he was going to go to the guy's football camp. The reason he owed him $600 is because the guy paid for the $1,200 for air flight, for plane and lodging. And then Geno was a no-show. So right out of the gate, your leadership douchebag quotient is off the charts. Like you told a teammate you would do him a solid. And then you said, fuck it, I changed my mind. I don't know, I was hungover, whatever. Then he's like, well, can we split that? Like, I don't want to be out to $1,200 for you stiffing me. And then which is already like, it should be like, I'm so sorry. Here's $2,000 and 55 signed footballs for the kids. Like, if you're a leader, right, you feel terrible about that. Geno goes, yeah, sure, we can split it. You'll get your $600 on the 5th of never. Fucking douchebag. And then the story, Brandon Marshall, is quoted throughout the story. He was a big Geno fan. But, it's like this idea that his career would have been different if he doesn't get his jaw broken before becoming, being the starting quarterback. It's like, Rodney Harrison torpedoed Trent Green's knee in the preseason and, you know, paved the way for Kurt Warner's incredible career. But then Trent Green got well and had an amazing career and was by, you know, I have won a fantasy championship with Trent Green as my QB in KC.
Did you really? Wow.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Trent Green hasn't thrown a football in 15 years, but
facts are facts. My name, if we could find the fucking trophy you lost, my team name is on it somewhere in the early days of the league. Anyway, so the
I walked the future Mrs. Trent Green down the aisle at a friend's wedding around about 95. So
they like as groomsman and bridesmaid.
Yeah.
Oh, very cool. Very fun fact. Anyway, so the point is, yeah, Trent Green, you know, got a filthy hit and was out and Kurt Warner got to win a Super Bowl. But then Trent Green rehabbed and was a good NFL quarterback. Geno Smith having his jaw broken, the idea that like this changed NFL history. No. He was fine and he's just not very good. That's the reality.
We have to go through that at some point, or maybe we don't have to go through it, but I really would love for someone more ambitious than I'd be happy to read it. I don't want to do the actual legwork on this though, but that always hits my ear weird. Basketball, you don't hear it as much, but hockey's like, this kid's going to be good. We got to get him up to speed to be our goaltender. It's like, he's too young. He's not ready for NHL play yet. Why? Because you don't want to shake his confidence. It'll ruin him. Pitchers, you always hear that. Like, you can't put him in quarterback. No, you got quarterback, at least. It's like the speed. You always hear about that. The game speed is just, it takes a minute to adjust to it for most human beings. But that thing of like, we got to hold him back a little bit. For emotional value is a weird one. I wonder how true that actually is. Like Mickey Mantle famously got sent down, right? Like he was bad. They sent him down for a minute and they brought him back.
It's funny. We had this thread, the Red Sox fan thread, where it was like, you know, the Red Sox called up Jeter Downs and it was like, they're going to destroy his confidence. He's not ready. He's hitting 165 in AAA. Like, he sucks. There's no confidence. Yes, he's not ready for the big leagues, not ready for the show. Guess what else he's not ready for? AAA or AA. He's fucking terrible. We didn't get a nickel on the dollar for Mookie Betts. We got zero, on the dollar. Verdugo's a serviceable kind of a fourth outfielder type. But, like, Jeter Downs is a bum. And it's like, first of all, if he had any confidence to shatter, then he's a sociopath because he's hitting 165 in AAA. I would hope he has no confidence.
I wonder though, but really, I was just like, oh, this kid is a phenom. He is going to be between the pipes for the next decade or 15 years. He's still 2 years away from the NHL though. Like he's got to get, why would put him in now if he's so good? All right. Last thing.
I gotta go. Wrap it up.
You gotta go. I want you to go. Packers, Vikings. This is, I hate these games. The Vikes host the Packers. Vikes at home are a 2-point dog. I think this is an interesting play to make right now. Take the Vikings +2, get in on it now. Cause the number will change. If the Packers are going to wind up with, it's looking more and more like they're not going to have either of their offensive tackles to start the season. That feels bad against a talented defense, a team that's going to be jazzed up for their coach's debut. Kirk Cousins, I'm in on all the jokes and everything. I like that Vikes team, especially in Week 1. Also, because from the other side, if the Packers win that one, it's like the division's a wrap. If the Vikes are 0-1 with a loss at home within the division against the team that they have to catch to win the division, it's kind of like the Bears ain't going to do it and the Lions ain't going to do it. I like the Vikes in this one. That's a little projection.
This will be my last thought. I'm going to sign out. Like, I'm not going to say goodbye. I don't know if it's an Irish goodbye or a French leave. I don't like that racist stuff.
You got red hair. That's fine.
So just exactly like the Tyreek Hill thing. It's like, does losing the best wide receiver in your conference matter? because the Vikings right. have the best wide receiver in the conference. So I, like, we're just right there. Boom, boom, boom. I like where your head's at. And I'm going to, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to say goodbye. I'm going to go get in on that right now. Vikings week one at home over the Packers.
There he goes. The great Kevin Hench. Enjoy Hawaii. Aloha to him, Eddie Spaghetti. That's a wrap. I was going to say your thoughts there. You want to get in on anything that that you heard there that caught your ear that you feel compelled to weigh in on beyond? Of course, don't miss Eddie Spaghetti and Jen Piacente on Thursday on Waiver Wired. What time are you getting going again there, Spaghetti?
Yeah, we were supposed to go Wednesday at 2. It's going to probably be our normal time. But, like, hey, Jen is a very busy person. Not only is she getting ready for fantasy football, she's also still doing fantasy baseball and baseball betting and stuff. So we're going today, Thursday, 4 p.m. Pacific time. We're going to get into okay. running backs. You should draft early round, mid round, late round, guys overvalued, guys undervalued. Very, very crucial show to your draft because we all know running backs are scarce here. The one thing that I would comment on, and I know our pal Nick Costas did actually tweet this and kind of was my thought too, because we've seen Tom Brady, like, stuff floated, like, oh, is it a COVID thing he's hiding? Is there trouble in paradise with Giselle? Whatever it is. To me, it's like, I just thought it's like, well, the guy's what, 45 years old? Like, he doesn't want to practice. He's not going to play any preseason games. No starting quarterback really is. He showed up, you know, did a few weeks of practice, you know, understands the system, understands the new players they have. And then he's going, okay, you know, I did what I have to do here. This is, you know, my 20 whatever training camp. I'm not going to play in the preseason, probably, if at all, maybe a quarter or a drive in the third game. So he says, I'm going to miss, you know, the first two games, whatever it is, and I'll see you guys soon. So I think sometimes the simplistic reason is a little bit better in this case than maybe the conspiratorial one.
That's fine. But there have been plenty weird stories about Brady that are slow burns.
I'm sure. Like,
wait, he did what? Wait,
this is for sure his last
Dolphins?
Year. This is his last
bizarre
year.
Stuff, and also so much of his success based on his own tale and the pass catchers he had. Boy, he just worked so long about, like, developing that chemistry over and over again. Julio Jones is brand new. Like, they have no chemistry to speak of. It's a weird story. I saw Costos say that. I completely get it. Maybe it is nothing. It's just a guy who's in his mid-40s who has a wife and kids and everything else. I don't know. There's something fishy about that one. But anyhow, all right. Go listen to that episode from earlier in the week with Costos. We deep dive on pro football. Some great stuff from him there. Make sure you track down Extra Points. Rob Parker visited on Thursday. Marty Weiss, Cousin Sal, and I. Great baseball talk. Great Game of Life talk there. In fact, consume all the great products at Extra Points Network. Go to extrapoints.com and check it all out there. Waiver Wired coming at you in a wee little bit. Hopefully, there's still time for you to catch it live. If not, no worries. Go back and track it down. Listen to it on your own time. And I guess that's a wrap for this week. We'll talk to you on the other side of the weekend when we'll be that much closer to pro football and college football action. Can't wait for that. Hope no one gets hurt on your favorite team or, in fact, across the league, with maybe some asterisks that Hench threw out earlier in the show. So for Eddie Spaghetti, Kevin Hench, everybody at Extra Points, thanks so much, sports fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.